This is the Feminem Podcast, the official podcast of Feminem, discussing all things femme, a little bit of EM, and everything in between. I'm Jenny Beck-Esme, editor-in-chief of Feminem. Next up on our Fix 17 podcasts, and guys, we are nearing the end of our Fix 17 podcasts. Today, we have Beating Burnout from Anahita Kalantari. She's Associate Program Director of Emergency Medicine at the residency at Milton S. Hershey Medical Center and Clinical Assistant Professor at Penn State Health. She is a super fabulous major friend of Feminem, and she's talking to you about burnout, and she gives her story about her own personal experience with burnout and how she became a wellness champion, how she started this mission in her life to make our wellness better. It's a fantastic talk. It's going to inspire you to make some changes for yourself and to kind of help spot these issues in other people so that we can all have more wellness in our lives. I think you're really going to like it. Take a listen.
All right, so we're going to start with a quiz. So I hope everybody is doing well after lunch and you're going to be able to think well with your glycemic index that you have now. We're going to split the room in half, all right? So let's go over here first. You guys are presented with a 55-year-old male who has crushing substernal chest pain, radiates to his left shoulder. He looks horrible. He's diaphoretic. He's tachypneic. You get a 12-lead EKG. You have huge tombstones in the anterior leads with reciprocal changes. What is his diagnosis, and what are you going to do? STEMI, activate cath lab. All right, good job. You guys nailed it. Let's see how you guys do. Yeah. It was kind of a softball. Anyways, let's see how you guys do. You are presented with an 18-year-old male with abdominal pain. Yesterday, it was periumbilical, and now that he's presenting to you, it's in his right lower quadrant. He's anorexic, he's nauseated, has a low-grade fever. On exam, he's point tender at McBurney's Point, and he has a normal testicular exam. What is his diagnosis, and what are you going to do? Okay, good. You guys nailed it, too. All right, good. We're two for two. Now, everybody, you're presented with a 38-year-old female who showed up 15 minutes late to a 7 a.m. shift in a high-acuity pod in the emergency department. The reason she's late is because she was up with her 3-year-old, who was up all night vomiting and febrile. She hit snooze so many times on the alarm clock that she didn't have enough time to get breakfast, basically chugged a cup of coffee on the way into work, got to work, and boom, STEMI alert. Two respiratory distresses, went and helped another colleague with a multi-trauma. Before you know it, it's 11 a.m. She has not had anything to eat. She's not had time to use the restroom. She has barked at 3 nurses, has alienated a resident. She feels horrible. She has about 10 hats that she's wearing at work, feels completely overwhelmed, didn't even really want to go to work because she has so many other things to do that are not clinically related, that the last thing she needed was this clinical shift. Doesn't want to take time to sit down and talk to patients about what's going on. And at the end of the day, she felt like garbage. What is her diagnosis, and what do you do? What do you do? So this is this right here. This is why we're talking about this. So through medical school, we were taught very astutely how to treat appendicitis. We were taught how to treat STEMI. But not everyone recognized that this was burnout. And when I asked you, what do you do about it? All the answers were completely different. We were in a profession where we are taught how to fix other people, but we can't even recognize some of the sequelae of our own profession and what to do to treat it. And that's why we're here. We're going to talk about how are we going to beat burnout if you're there, and how are you going to avoid it so that you never get there. I have one thing to disclose to you about this talk. That was me. That 38-year-old female was me on October 22nd of last year. Now you guys can all come to my 40th birthday party, because you know how old I am now. I am here to share with you the journey that I went on to never be her again. It was embarrassing. I felt horrible. And the fact that I did not want to go to work clinically to treat patients is mind-blowing, because the only reason why I went into medicine was to treat patients. Listen, when most of us in this room went into medicine, doctors were not making money. That ship sailed. Like, those days are long gone. We went into it to help patients, and all I could think of was, oh my God, I cannot believe I have to go in on a shift today. This is like the worst. My only objective for all of you is for you to be able to find clarity and balance. That's it. I don't have a list of things. I hope after this talk, you will do better in finding clarity and finding balance in your life. What's the major issue with finding balance? Is sometimes the world feels like there is a bomb going off, and not just a little bomb, a nuclear bomb. When we're working, we're getting pulled in so many different directions, and even our lives in general, we're getting pulled in so many directions. While I stand here and I speak to you, everyone in my house is febrile and puking. Like, everyone. It just kind of works that way, that every time I leave, it happens. But I missed it. So, but we are getting pulled in so many different directions, even at work. Right? There's how many different organizations are there with different letters for names that tell us what boxes we need to check and when we need to do it? And then we have Prestigeni scores. And then we have I didn't even see a doctor. Or we get called nurse. It's profound. And you feel like a bomb is going off. And so maybe it's not always possible to be in that moment of clarity. Maybe it's the system. And it may be the system. But right now, individually, we have things that we can do for ourselves. There was a paper that came out in 2015 in the Mayo Clinic Proceeding. And I'm sure most of you have read that paper, but in a different form of the data that I'm putting up here. In that paper, they did a survey, and they sent it out to every physician in the United States. And they got about a 24% return on that survey. Not great, but from the data, they found that on average, 54% of doctors have felt burnout. ED physicians were over 70%. If you're IM, you're not safe. You're just over 65. And if you're FM, you're not safe. You're just over 60. The front lines really get hit. The other thing they did was they did the same study in 2011, and they compared their 2011 and 2014 data and published it in this 2015 paper. The rate of burnout increased almost 10% across the board in every specialty. So what am I going to talk to you guys about today? Well, we're going to discuss what are our needs as human beings. What is it that we actually need just to be a human on this earth? What happens to us physiologically when we don't meet those needs? And what are some tools to help us overcome that burn? What can we do to put out the fire? So who knows what this is? Yeah, Maslow's hierarchy of needs. This is not a novel idea. It came out in 1954. I am not giving you earth-shattering information right here. But how this works is each level of this pyramid addresses things that we need as human beings just to live in our lives. And it's not like once you meet the bottom rung, you move up. These all work in concert with one another. Physiologic is quite that. It is literally physiologic. It's air, water, food, clothing, shelter. And what do you think the last one is that I guarantee most of you don't get in here? Sleep. Sex is coming. I can share a few things with you. We'll talk after. So these are just the basic physiologic needs of what we need to be living human beings. Next is security, and it's your own personal security that you can walk down the street without getting shot, which that comes into question a little bit these days. Your financial security, that you can pay for those things that you need physiologically, and then security in your health. And maybe you do have a health problem, but knowing that you live in a place where you can have access to health care to take care of that, that's security. Love and belonging. Note well, belonging. It is not love and fitting in. Fitting in is when you need to change yourself to be accepted by part of a group. Belonging is when that group embraces you and loves you for who you are. And this comes in various parts. It might be your bestie, maybe whoever you came to this conference with. Maybe it's your crew, your gal pals, or guy pal. I'm not going to discriminate. Your family, whether that is your biologic family or the people that you chose to call family. And then here is where intimacy, physical contact, and sex come into play. Esteem also has two parts. So if I come up to you and I say, you know what, you are great. You are really, really awesome. I have so much respect for you. That's lower esteem. That's when someone else is kind of giving you your kudos. And then there's the higher esteem where you go, you know what, I'm great. I'm awesome. I have a lot of respect for myself. These are all parts of what we need as a human. And all of this comes together to a concept that's called self-actualization. Now, there's a lot of theories about this, and some of them are argued, but I'm going to talk to you about this is the climb to clarity. This is we've met all the needs on the rest of the pyramid, so now that we can meet our fullest potential, and this is where we have clarity. So what happens when we don't get those things? Stress. Stress is what happens, and it actually has a profound physiologic effect on us. So there is actual physiology out here. Stress comes into your hypothalamus, right? It then causes corticotropin-releasing hormone to go down to your pituitary gland. Your pituitary then creates adrenocorticotropin hormone and goes down to your adrenal glands. Your adrenal glands do what they're supposed to do, and they release cortisol, norepinephrine, and epinephrine into your circulation. We need this. This is normal. This actually imprints long-term memory. When you're under a stress and these catecholamines are released, this imprints long-term memory in how you learn safety. And when that stressor's over, everything turns off. But under chronic stress, it doesn't turn off. And these circulating catecholamines and cortisol, they have a profound effect on us. You have decreased memory, insomnia. There are studies where they actually demonstrate neuronal loss and advanced dementia in rats. For obvious reasons, this cannot be replicated in humans, but that's pretty profound. Stomach issues, anorexia, nausea, vomiting, diarrhea, unwanted weight loss, IBS, sound familiar? Who knows the person or is the person who always has a cold? Like you're always wiping down the workstation after they leave. Maybe it's stress. We have adrenal suppression. I have 3 and 4-year-old boys who are petri dishes and bring all kinds of nasty things into the house all the time. Even without that, under stress, you can have adrenal suppression. The cardiovascular effects are very well documented. We have increased resting heart rate, increased blood pressure. Takotsubo syndrome is this physiology. This is why it exists. And then we have our pancreatic issues, insulin resistance, increased abdominal fat deposition, diabetes. These are actual physiologic things that happen to us. For women, decreased bone formation happens in excessive amounts of cortisol. And there are pain syndromes now linked to chronic stress. It was published in a paper in the Journal of Physical Therapy in 2014. And now in Europe, they're starting to do studies that if you treat that underlying stress, can you cure that pain syndrome? The fact of the matter is stress begets stress. Once you're stressed, you're more anxious, you're more depressed, you're more withdrawn, you're more impatient, and it just gets worse. And then you go out there, you go out into the world, and you're putting out negative. And as you're putting out negative, all you're getting back is negative. No one is going to spit glitter and rainbows at you if you're barking at them. And no one is saying that you're intentionally barking at them. But the monster just gets bigger and bigger until it's out of control. And before you know it, you are absolutely on fire. And you may say, you know what, AK, that's fine. I feel like I can deal with that. It does not affect my patient care. False. In 2002, the Annals of Internal Medicine published a study where they surveyed their medical residents. And what they did was they asked a series of questions, and these questions were to determine, are you burnt out versus are you not burnt out? And then once they've identified that, they asked a separate series of questions that dealt with patient care and attitudes. I pulled two questions from this survey. This is the first one. The top line are the residents that identified as not being burnt out. The bottom line are the residents that identified as being burnt out. White was yearly, yellow was weekly, or monthly, and orange was weekly. Patient errors not due to lack of knowledge on a weekly basis. Here's another question. Now, I'm not saying every time a patient dies, we need to feel that pain with the family. But to feel nothing at the loss of another human life on a weekly basis is devastating. So burnout is real. Now, throughout our talk, we're going to do a series of homework assignments. So get out your little pens and pads or, I don't know, voice record me or something because I don't have this written up on the screen. But our first homework assignment is this. There are 168 hours in a week. I want you to go through and calculate the average number of hours that you work, the average number of hours that you sleep, and subtract that from your total number of hours. Look at what you have left and figure out what are you doing with the rest of that time. And that is everything. That's showering. If you have kids, it's kid things, driving them to different places. Your commute to work. If you have animals, it's animal things. If you go grocery shopping, do the laundry, do whatever you need around the house, whatever it is that you do in that week, I want you to calculate all of that and figure out what are you doing with your 168 hours. Now, due to the nature of time, we can't do this right now because normally when I give this talk, we do it as a little workshop. So that's your homework assignment, number one. What are you doing with the 168 hours of your week? And diary all of it. All right, so we were on fire. Now we want to know what tools do we have to put out that fire. Well, I think we all know about exercise. There are a myriad of studies that document the benefits of exercise. They release endorphins. Endorphins are your own internal Prozac. So basically, things that would make you upset or angry without exercise probably aren't going to upset you as much once you exercise. There was a really interesting study that was published where they took a group of males, of course males, and they split them up into two separate groups. The one group, they had them go do some cardiovascular exercise. The other group, they just had them hang out in a room. I don't know, maybe like watching sports or eating chips. I don't know what they did. They then brought both of the groups together, and they had every individual read a 5-minute passage in front of an audience. They measured heart rate, blood pressure, and salivary cortisol levels. The exercise group had favorable numbers in all three of those compared to the non-exercise group. We know exercise works. Now, when I say exercise, oh, you need to exercise, what do you think of immediately? When I say you need to exercise, what's the first thing that pops in your head?
Running.
Running?
Go to the gym.
Go to the gym. Go to the gym. I love this. This is so, like, us. Go big or go home, right? You don't need to start a gym membership. If you are doing absolutely nothing right now, walking for 5 minutes one time every week, that's more than the nothing that you were doing the week before, right? There's this Japanese concept, it's called the Kaizen effect, where all you need to do is look at your life and make a series of small changes, and when those small changes add up on top of each other, there's a very profound effect at the end of that. So when I'm telling you exercise, I am not telling you to go to, I don't know where these meat markets are, because I don't go to the gym. But I'm not telling you to do that. I'm just telling you to do 5 minutes more of the nothing you're doing now. We are what we eat. Whenever I eat fast food, which unfortunately sometimes I have to, I feel horrendous. That is not just me. There are a lot of mood and food relationships and studies that are out there. Eating healthy makes you feel better. The other thing that makes you feel better is eating. Hangry is real. Unlike man flu, hangry is real. Having a steady glycemic index is an important part of practice. When I went into work that day, I didn't eat anything. Never once since that day have I reported for a shift without eating something. And now I have healthy snacks that I kind of just jam in my face throughout the entire day when I have time. But I'm maintaining my glycemic index. Oh, sleep. Since the invention of electricity, the average hours of sleep for us has gone down every year. What do you guys think it is? What's the average number of hours that we get a night? It's five. Surprise. It's down to five. What do you think we need? Around eight. The average number that... Our bodies don't evolve that fast. They didn't just magically stop requiring sleep because now we have light bulbs. We don't work that way. Now, this is one of my tools. I do yoga. These next two are what I do. I do yoga because for me, prior to starting all of this, I'm one of those people that I would lay down at night to go to sleep, and right then, at that moment, when I needed to go to sleep, I thought of every single thing I needed to think of in my entire life right now. And then I can't go to sleep. So I started yoga because this doesn't look that difficult, but in order to maintain an appropriate downward dog where you activate all of the muscles that you need to activate, it takes concentration. And if you don't concentrate, you're not doing it right. So there's a lot of mind-body benefit out of that. Mindful meditation. We have Diane Birnbaumer here in the audience who's going to be doing a study with Ken Milne on mindful meditation and burnout in the emergency departments. Mindful meditation has been studied, and it works in patients with terminal cancer, in patients with severe cardiac illness. The Royal College recommends an 8-week course in mindful meditation in the treatment of anxiety. And it's something a lot of us haven't tapped into, and we don't know. But it's a huge part of other cultures. I also love being outdoors. Love it. To just walk out and like take a crisp breath of fresh air, I love it. It's liberating for some people. Other people, I mean, this would be detrimental to you, and there's no way you could even handle it. And that's fine. We don't all have to have the same thing. Spending time with our kids, if we have them. Spending time with our fur kids. I wasn't going to leave you guys out. So your next homework assignment is, I want you to go through, please, and create a list of all those things in your life that replenish you, that recharge you, and put it all down. The key to fighting burnout is finding balance. And I don't know if any of you read the recent blog I wrote. I do not believe in work-life balance. I do not feel that you can separate the two of them. Work is just as much a part of life as your life is just as much a part of your work. It's just life balance in general. It's the good with the bad. It's the stress with the relaxation. I'm a realist. I'm not going to tell you keep all the negative thoughts out of your head. That's impossible. We're human beings. This is how we think. But accept those negative thoughts, let them come in, acknowledge them, and then let them go. And balance them with the positive. This might not be possible. Finding clarity and your moment of zen when a nuclear bomb is going off may not be possible, but working towards that journey, making it part of your everyday practice, will help you at least get close to it. It is the only way that is not related to system issues in the places that we're working that we are going to be able to take care of ourselves and avoid being ablaze. I'm not going to leave you with all these different take-home points. I'm going to leave you with another homework assignment. Once you've looked at what you do every week, I want you to take a look at the things that recharge you and find 1 hour every week to take something that recharges you and put it into that hour. I don't know about the men in the room, but I'm sure with the women in here, you guys can relate. We put ourselves last. We take care of everything else in the entire world before we take care of ourselves. We take care of the kids. We take care of the household. We take care of our partners. And we are always last. And I am here to please, please ask you, give to yourself first. Give yourself 1 hour. You are in a profession where you are always giving. You're giving your time, you're giving your energy, your brain, your compassion. Give to yourself that 1 hour, and I promise you, you will beat burnout.